Imagine if today was the day your idea changed someone's life. Imagine if you could help someone pay for college, help your community build a new playground, or help a child make it to that dream competition. With GoFundMe, it's all possible. GoFundMe is the world's number one fundraising platform trusted by over 190 million people. Every week, ordinary people meet their goals and do extraordinary things. Your ideas matter. GoFundMe isn't just for emergencies. Want to raise money for your kid's soccer team or raise funds for a small business, a creative project, or event? GoFundMe helps you turn ideas into reality. And help adds up. Fundraisers you start for someone else raise up to 5 times more. So think right now, who could use your help? Change rarely comes from waiting. It comes from someone deciding, today I'll start. Don't wait for someone else to bring change. Today, start your fundraiser in just minutes at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com to start your fundraiser. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Working the Olympics and working for Coca-Cola connected those dots for me. Like, even though they were a beverage company, right? There was a full-on caterer on record that was responsible for servicing 200,000 people a day. So when you think about the logistics that come with that, where do you store all the goods? How do you transport all the goods? How do you even keep track of the inventory? All those things are 3 different career paths, right? Because you're talking about logistics, supply chain needs, right? You're talking about even delivery and having that people management side of things. And then the backdrop, oh yeah, by the way, it's for this little bitty event called the Olympics.
Voices with value, stories with soul, tools for transformation. This is Innovation Insights. Innovate so you do not stagnate. Welcome to another episode of Innovation Insights, where bold ideas meet real-world impact. We believe that innovation happens in all aspects of life. I am your host, Dr. Yolanda Sanders. Today, we're excited to introduce a visionary leader who is redefining what it means to innovate across industries. Meet Adeola Sakumbi, a powerhouse program manager for a leading SaaS company that simplifies scheduling for millions of users worldwide. In her current role, she drives high-priority initiatives that strengthen global security, compliance, and data privacy, and is recognized as a Certified Information Privacy Professional, Europe CIPPE, a mark of her deep expertise in data protection, law, and regulation. But Adeola's story does not stop at tech. Her journey spans more than a decade in sports and entertainment, where she led logistics for major events like the London Olympic Games and the Super Bowl, and managed premier venues in Atlanta's convention district, generating over $1 million in annual revenue through sharp negotiation and operational excellence. Today, she's also an adjunct professor at Georgia State University, teaching hospitality law and mentoring the next generation of industry professionals. Adeola's passion for education, workforce development, and community leadership is evident in every chapter of her career. Most recently, Adeola co-founded the Culinary and Hospitality Enthusiast of the Future, Chef Academy in DeKalb County, Georgia, the first Black woman-owned culinary academy in the Southeast. Launched in collaboration with Chef Simone Byron, the academy is an extension of the Navigate Foundation, a nonprofit workforce development initiative empowering underrepresented youth to pursue careers in hospitality. Since its founding, the foundation has graduated over 200 students. The Chef Academy is more than a culinary school. It is a vibrant community hub offering hands-on training, certification programs in partnership with the American Culinary Foundation, and even creative spaces for mixology, content production, and cultural events. For Adeola, this endeavor is deeply personal and rooted in legacy, honoring the culinary traditions passed down through generations of strong women in her family. Her work is a bold example of how innovation, heritage, and impact can come together to create lasting change. Please join me in welcoming the brilliant and inspiring Adeola Sakumbi to the Innovation Insights podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Adeola. We are so happy to have you here.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
So we met through a mutual acquaintance and networking through LinkedIn, basically. So thank you for being here. Your career has been across a variety of industries. And what really intrigued me was your work in sports and entertainment and technology, plus academia and culinary innovation. I love it. I love it because you're just innovating across so many different areas. Would you tell us, walk us through your journey?
Yeah. First off, thank you, Dr. Sanders, for having me. I'm so excited to talk about my journey and really walking it through. I would definitely describe it as curiosity, but it's not kills the cat. I stay alive in the end. And essentially, as a child, I was always intrigued by people. And my upbringing is Nigerian. Both of my parents are Nigerian. And so they are, I would describe them as the consummate welcomers and full of hospitality. And being in a home and being the firstborn and being responsible for helping set up the table and welcome guests into our home, I started to realize that I had a not only just curiosity, but a true passion in terms of hospitality and taking care of people. And as I grew up, I started to really get serious about wanting to make hospitality specifically a career for me. And I decided to go to Georgia State University and major in hospitality. But while I was doing that, I was working in restaurants. And so not only was I getting an idea of what it's like of just enjoying and getting that college life feel, but then also working in the kitchen and understanding the dynamics of personnel and being on the line and the pressure of everything. And then also getting exposed to front of house and welcoming guests and conflict resolution, which will matter later on in this discussion. And after graduating, I had the amazing opportunity to intern for Coca-Cola during the London 2012 Olympics. And that combination of sports, people from around the world, entertainment, food and beverage was all mixed into one, like literally the day I stepped off of the stage and graduated. So to be able to have that type of experience of all these different things thrown at you, I was like, I'm chasing that high for the rest of my career. And I had the opportunity to do that. And then I came back to Atlanta and was an intern all over again. And I worked in the sales department, booking events at the Georgia Dome. And again, still stayed in sports, saw how NFL games were planned and executed. I saw how marching band and HBCU classics, because we always had those types of events in the Georgia Dome as well, from major concerts. And so just being able to be exposed to all of that early on in my career, I just kept on exploring and trying to figure out, like, how much more does this industry have to offer? And so fast forward, after working at the Dome, I transitioned to Centennial Olympic Park, which was an outdoor facility. It was literally the one full-time job that I applied for and got, right? And festivals, food festivals, cultural festivals, weddings, charity walks, like all these different types of things that are involved in booking, planning, and executing outdoor space. It just was another way for me to really enjoy this career, meeting a lot of great and fantastic people along the way. Part two of the story, fast forward to 2019, when I still was having that bug and trying to figure out what I wanted to do next. Not that I was tired of hospitality or anything, but I wanted to continue to grow my career. And the idea sparked about going back to school. And it was a back and forth between getting an MBA and pursuing law. And so the way that happened was talking to some really close friends. It was like, I know, like, you already have your master's in business. Like, you have been working in the industry for a long time. And one thing I've started to realize is that working these high profile events, especially on the sales and event side, you're dealing with a lot of contracts. You're dealing with a lot of negotiation. You're dealing with a lot of relationship building. And so it started to make more and more sense to pursue getting a master's in the study of law. And I did that at the University of Georgia. And I haven't looked back since, because I think after taking that step in pursuing education, one, seeing that even though it felt a little bit out of left field, it taught me that I can do something different. And then two, it was just another platform for me to be able to maneuver additional industries, which landed me in tech in 2020, when everything came to a halt with major events, especially in sports and entertainment. And I went back. The powerhouse scheduling company that you mentioned early on in the introduction is where I started working in their legal department, trying to understand and draw things together about how legal matches with tech and what are the needs with that. Try to keep it short in terms of all the things that I've done, but that's pretty much like my journey. And I'm happy to just dig into the details of like how all these things happen.
Oh my goodness. How old are you? 80? 100?
It's funny. I've always been told I have an old soul. So potentially, there's probably 5 different people in me right now. Like, all right, we got to do this next. This is what I wanted to do in my past life.
It's so funny because people will tell me that, oh my gosh, you've had so many different lives. You have really have had so many different lives and such amazing experiences. Okay, let's see. Where are we going to dig it? Okay, I want to go back to Coca-Cola.
Okay.
And interning there and at the Olympics. And tell us, what was that experience like? And what were some takeaways for you from that experience?
It was exhilarating, one. And it didn't end the way it started, right? Like, initially, it was going to be this, like, 1-week trip just to see what's going on. We didn't have a job description. It was just like, hey, Coke is a big sponsor for the Olympics. They're, you know, Georgia State has this partnership. And essentially, it was like, are you guys open to shadowing someone who is working the Olympics? Mm-hmm. And then it turned into an actual internship as more questions started to arise. But now as a professor, I can see on the back end, like, oh, okay, hold on a second. So we're going to take these kids all the way across the country for a major event. Are they getting paid? Do they need visas? All these different things. And so it actually just started. The thing is, I said yes before I even knew what it really was. But what it ended up being was an experience of a lifetime that connected the dots for me. Because for the longest, and I think that perception still persists, when you think about hospitality and think about culinary, you think, oh, you're going to be a chef. And not to say anything is wrong with that career path, but there's so many other pieces that come into this business. And there's so many different revenue streams that come from it as well. And like working the Olympics and working for Coca-Cola connected those dots for me. Like, even though they were a beverage company, right? There was a full-on caterer on record that was responsible for servicing 200,000 people a day. So when you think about the logistics that come with that, where do you store all the goods? How do you transport all the goods? How do you even keep track of the inventory? All those things are 3 different career paths, right? Because you're talking about logistics, supply chain needs, right? You're talking about even delivery and having that people management side of things. And then the backdrop, oh yeah, by the way, it's for this little bitty event called the Olympics. So security, right? Understanding different cultures, having a cultural competency that is so important as we really think about all the things going on geopolitically today, right? And so it's like that experience, we were there for a whole month So we were there 2 weeks before the games and then during the games. And at that time, which is so groundbreaking, we were using the finest of technology, right? Like it was 2012, like Twitter was in its infancy. Facebook wasn't launched yet. And we had iPads. And at that time, right, it was like, oh my gosh, we have iPads to be able to deliver and know the inventory in real time, the Coca-Cola product to each of the respective venues. And so like, even then, I'm literally just connecting the dots now about being exposed to cutting edge technology in a hospitality space. It actually makes that much more sense of what I'm doing now as well, working for a technology firm with all that hospitality background. And so it just opened my eyes on how everything intersects. And it's just, culinary is a huge piece, right? Because you're drinking that bottle of Coke with an awesome meal, but there's so much more surrounding it. And that's really what that experience did for me.
Amazing, amazing. Now, you also mentioned working with other large sporting events and venues. And what were some of your experiences and what would you advise students or young professionals who want to work for the Super Bowl or be involved with large festivals and all of that? What advice?
Yeah, a couple of things come to my mind. Being open and being willing to do the work. And one thing that I'll really say about being open is that the path to be there is not singular. A lot of times, even the students that I have now, they'll say they want to work for the NBA and they say, oh, a path to do that is to work in sports marketing. Sports marketing is so niche, right? And you don't come out of school with all the skills to be a seasoned sports marketer that's going to work for a blue chip company. You oftentimes have these different experiences leading up to it to get to that ultimate goal. And I think a lot of times students may not necessarily have a full scope and picture of how that can happen, right? Because when I came back, I was a sales intern, right? And even then, a sales intern turned into a sales executive for a park. So like when you think of working at an outdoor park, you don't necessarily on the top of your mind think about how am I going to be able to work in sports? But what people don't realize is that when you have something like the NCAA Final Four that's going on right now, right? They're going to have fan activations prior to the games. And so where does that happen? In the open space that's directly next to the stadium. So in realizing like my path was non-traditional, you could have thought I'm just going to sit here and book a whole bunch of picnics and family reunions. I did that too. However, like thinking through what it's not always just the end thing. It's like, what's the thing that gets me to the thing? And so I think being open to exploring non-traditional paths and getting out of this mindset that my resume has to have X123 is, oh, if I'm going to be a sports marketer, I have to be a marketing intern. I have to be a marketing intern at this team. And then I have to, and it's no, like you can be in sales for an outdoor park that is, you know, again, that's in the middle of the city, right? But owned by the state. There's so many different things that you don't even realize unless you're just willing to be open and try a different path. And so, yeah, that would be one thing that I would say for students to always bear in mind is that it's not going, the goal is great, but the path is what I think we get tripped up on how to get there.
Yeah. Oh, what great advice. And what's your thought about documenting that path? How should students, okay, I'm an intern, I'm interning at the park, and let's say, yeah, the NCAA finals are happening, and I'm involved in events and coordinating logistics as an intern. How do I document that and show that, excuse me, on my resume, my portfolio, my LinkedIn, so that someone would hire me later on?
Yeah, that is the biggest thing about, one, leveraging the amazing tools that they have nowadays, ChatGPT, because I will say today, okay, I did this. What type of skill does this invoke? But truly, it's about documenting the transferable skill, right? And so that is the time where, as college students, they can literally analyze the actions that they made and take away the industry that it happened, take away the event that was so special, and really pull into, what did I actually do? Because even if I look at before even being able to be an intern at the Dome and then working at the park, I was carting Coca-Cola bottles into coolers. But what was happening in between, right? I was building relationships. That is the fundamental piece of a sales executive, right? I was learning how to be organized and time management, right? Because at the end of the day, I had to get these Coca-Cola bottles over to this cooler in a certain period of time. That is a skill that translates to any industry, right? You're going to have to learn and understand how to manage your time, right? Then you think about when I am working inside Centennial Olympic Park and it's an open space, it's open to the general public, right? And so you're going to have to understand what it's like working with different departments if there is a safety concern in communicating, right? So I would be documenting in that experience what my communication skills are, because I'm having to get a quick message out in a timely manner without inciting panic, right? Because then that defeats the whole purpose of me even notifying someone that something has gone wrong, is that if I panic and if I'm the one that's, then it exacerbates. Communication are the things that, you know, communication, time management, and relationship building came out of those experiences. And so I would say for students, for their LinkedIn, and the best way to document it is to pull back the layer, because the shiny brands are awesome, but it's like, what did you actually do and what skills did you gain from it? And so that would be my advice, is think about the skills that you used.
That is great advice. Thank you. Thank you. And that leads me to your teaching. You're obviously a lifelong learner, believe in continuous education and learning. You have a few degrees. And so what are your thoughts on educating your students, and in what areas do you teach in?
Yeah. So my thoughts on education is the fact that I have to go back to the quote that my mom gave me all the time, is that experience is the best teacher. And she usually used it in a context when I was being a little hard-headed and she had an idea of what I should do and I had an idea of what I should do. And she would just say, experience is the best teacher. But truly, I think that is something that has molded me, and I like to instill it into my students, is that go out and do the thing. A part of the thing that I skipped over in my intro was the fact that, knowing I wanted to work in hospitality, I said I wanted to go to school and go to culinary school. And again, mom's awesome advice, go and actually work in a restaurant and see if this is the investment that you want to make, because culinary school at that time was 15 times the amount of what it would have been for me to go to a state school. And so that experience, working in the kitchen, hearing the noise, leveraging time management, communication, and all that kind of stuff, taught me what I needed to know as it relates to whether I wanted to pursue this career further on. And so the same thing, right, for students today. So I teach hospitality law, and literally it's me sharing my experiences, right? And I also am going to be, and I think it's public knowledge now, but I'll also be teaching venue management later on this fall, which, again, the different sporting venues, the outdoor venues, and even the convention center that I had the pleasure of working with as well, is what I'll be teaching. And that's just in one aspect. The other aspect is that I co-own a facility called Chef Academy, and it's located in Tucker, Georgia. I co-own it alongside Chef Simone Byron, and that is an experiential kitchen. You see the trend there? And essentially, it is a kitchen where we bring in aspiring culinarians and give them the training that they need in a real life kitchen, right? And also teaching them soft skills and also preparing them to go into the workforce. And those are the areas in which I share my knowledge, right? So on the university level with Georgia State and hospitality law, but then also on a high school and just that in-between stage for young people is having a facility that gives them the real life experience of working in the kitchen, working major events, because we also create experiences where they may go to a festival and work underneath the chef. And that's part of the curriculum as well. My philosophy with education is like having the real life experience plus the book knowledge. But sometimes that book knowledge comes by way of, again, getting thrown in there.
No, that hands-on learning can't top that. Well, what inspired you to co-found the Chef Academy?
What inspired you? So I would definitely say my co-founder, Chef Simone Byron, was someone who is super inspirational in her own right. And when I was transitioning out of the authority and into full-time school, she pulled me to the side because we were just at that time trying to collaborate on doing a special event. She had a nonprofit that she had in practice and needed someone on paper to help incorporate it. And we were just having a conversation. She pulled me to the side and she said, "You're never too young to mentor." And oftentimes throughout my career, I was always the youngest in the room. So I was always searching for mentors and doing one-on-ones and asking questions. And so when she said that, it changed my perspective about education, because I'm always the seeker of knowledge and asking questions. And it's, wait a minute, you and your stage have something to share with the people coming in behind you. And so that's really what planted the seed of even me considering going back and not only teaching at Georgia State, but then also continuing to work with her in founding the Chef Academy. And really, that seed was planted in terms of inspiration that it can be done, that I'm not too young to actually turn around and teach others. But then also part of what Chef Academy's founding was for was to fill a gap. It was to fill a need. And it was even filling a need before we even realized how much of a need was there. So the first immediate need was the nonprofit called the Navigate Foundation, which I work with and collaborate on with her on as well, needed a standalone facility to execute those trainings. And then second, what was happening at the same time is that the very same culinary school that I wanted to go to back in 2008 closed down. And so currently right now in the city of Atlanta, there are no culinary schools in the city of Atlanta, which is so hard to fathom because we are a mature city with a very ample food scene. And so when you think about what's going to happen to the pipeline of young, either entrepreneurs or trained staff for your facilities, there is not a formal institution of education that's dedicated to culinary in the city limits. And we didn't realize like that was happening in real time for us, but the inspiration was there that what young people deserve a chance. All the awesome experiences that I got, that should be recreated, and why not me? And that's really what was the genesis of it. But then it also just, it feels a very important need. And the reality is like now we live in a world of infotainment. So even if you're not pursuing a career as a chef or in hospitality, people see food, the creation of food, as entertainment. And so Chef Academy is actually an acronym that stands for Culinary and Hospitality Enthusiast of the Future. And so you can just be really enthusiastic about food and still come and take classes.
And that is a brilliant niche to fill because people do love to take classes and workshops around culinary as a topic. And so that is absolutely brilliant. And is, you know, so innovative to see a gap and fill it big. That is so exciting. How long have you been open as of this recording?
Yes. Well, as of this recording, Chef Academy has been open for about a year now. And so, like, we signed the papers earlier in 2024, and then we had a formal grand opening to the public fall of last year. And so, yeah, it's going up on a good year being in business, specifically at Chef Academy as a facility. And there's a lot of groundwork. There's a lot of planning, a lot of preparation. But now we're actually in the space of launching our wine class that starts on Monday. Well, we also have courses for homeschooled students that they can come in and learn. And so that launches off at the end of this month. And then we'll also have summer camps going on in July, June and July. We are ready and open for business. But yeah, it's been a year. And like about 9 months of that has been just straight up planning. We're truly open for business for the general public. We are rolling.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit more about Navigate Foundation, too.
Yeah. So Navigate Foundation is a nonprofit workforce development organization that specializes in providing culinary and soft skills training for underrepresented but high potential youths. And so literally what the Navigate Foundation does is we find students on the high school level and we tap into their culinary classes, or even that they just express interest in culinary and haven't even had the opportunity to take the class yet in their respective high school. And then we also partner with community-based organizations as well, because we do service young adults that may have had an interesting path in life that finds them in a space where hospitality may be the only tangible career that they can explore given their specific background. And we train them. And the thing about it is, and the genesis of the Navigate Foundation came from a space of, again, Chef Simone Byron being an educator within the Gwinnett County school system for over 10 years and having those students graduate. Because she was like, I know they got the skills, but then they would go into the workforce and 2 weeks later get fired or 2 weeks later quit. And it's like, what's going on? And realize that there was not only a standpoint of professionalism and like just this mentorship that needed to happen in between. Because as we all know, we may come out with the skills, but you still need some refinement getting into the workforce. Mm-hmm. And the Navigate Foundation tailors and refines that student coming out of that program. And then the unique part about Navigate is that it has an exclusive partnership with the Compass Group, which what people don't realize is that Compass Group is the largest food service company in the world. And it's full circle for both me and Chef Simone, because when I was working at the George Will Congress Center, Compass Group was the food service provider there. And so like when we think about these large scale venues, that is the entity behind servicing all that amazing food. And so the partnership between Navigate and Compass is that every student that is trained out of the Navigate program are placed directly into Compass Group jobs. And so not only does that provide an opportunity for them to have, it changes their social, just off the bat, giving someone training, literally teaching them how to fish, right? You never go hungry because now you have a tangible skill and you have an employer ready to take you in and not only provide you with a wage, it's a paid internship, but then it's built into the infrastructure that there's mentorship happening. There's training happening. There's this, even the wraparound services are happening as well in terms of, as we know, there's so much more than just going into work, right? Your uniform has to be right. You have to have transportation to get there. And they support those efforts. And so the Navigate Foundation is just an amazing entity. And it has opened my eyes in terms of the world of nonprofit, because I think I don't even speak about that enough, right? I came from a space of, okay, food, hospitality, corporate, big companies, for-profit, sales, all that kind of stuff. And being able, and like when I thought about nonprofits, I always thought of that from a standpoint of, oh, you just do galas. And I'm like, no, there's so much amazing work that happens. And so that is the Navigate Foundation in a nutshell. And again, it's part of this overall ecosystem of hospitality that I'm so thankful to be involved in.
The hospitality industry is thankful to have you. And I'm sure Atlanta is, oh my goodness, thank you. How has your professional network allowed you to, you know, you mentioned Compass, working with them, and then the Navigate. Could you talk a little bit about how networking and those relationships allowed you to build those opportunities for students? Because I just want our audience to hear a little bit more about that importance of networking.
Yeah, it is paramount. I think even outside of the professional space, any influential person has a combination of capital, like the way we think of it, like financial capital, but they also have social capital. And I don't think I don't know why I never saw it as a bad thing, but apparently the word networking gets a bad rap. And I think it's because it can be superficial, but meaningful relationships and having meaningful social capital will get you into doors that money cannot buy. And so one of the things that early on, and that's what shaped my idea of networking, was when you come into a situation of getting to know someone, you're always coming from a space, or I always make it a point to come to a space of, what can I do for you? And that's the correct way of approaching networking. That is the correct way to build social capital and influence. And like, even it was like a running joke while I was in college, I was the volunteer of the year. Okay. Like, one, it was a strategy for me to be able to go to all the dope events that I couldn't afford the ticket to go to. But second to that, and actually more important to that, it was my way of building social capital. I volunteered my time, right? I didn't have the financial capital. I volunteered my time to these industry execs that on the side were working as a contractor for this major festival. They needed volunteers to help them. I did that. And so by the time I was working all these events and volunteering for all these different opportunities, I knew who the head of marketing was. I knew who the fundraising chair for that gala was, because I was the person willing to work the front desk. I was the person walking them to their seat. And so that small talk that you get with someone on a personal level, and you remember those details, the next time you see them as an event, and then you're just starting out in your career, it's, oh, hi, Mrs. I remember you. Do you remember me from the X, Y, and Z? Oh, yeah, I helped you find your seat, or I helped you get your coat when you were waiting outside at the valet for 30 minutes, and we struck up a conversation. So when you're going into those business environments, you have that rapport, or even if they don't remember you, you don't feel as nervous when you make that real pitch, because you have had some sort of interaction with the people in the room. And even though it may have been in a different capacity, when it is time to go to that negotiation table, you have that leverage, because I know how to relate to this person. And I will always say this, hospitality taught me more about negotiation and conflict resolution than law ever did. Because when you are standing at the host stand and you are standing in between someone and their meal, and you say there's a 2-hour wait, every skill that you need to deploy in terms of de-escalation, in terms of friendliness and doing what you can to stall, is going to be deployed more so than ever. Or at least I would say it helped me more so than not when I was having really tough negotiations in these high profile events. And so I would definitely say understanding networking comes from giving more than getting, and really utilizing that social capital. So I hope I answered that question as it relates to how important it is to network.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And you've given us such great examples of how you've been able to build a business, and that's been through your network and just excellent. And your students are so lucky to have you. They really are. And thinking about that, you are doing such a fabulous job of moving back and forth between industry and education. And sometimes we see academia and industry just far apart, not integrated. But you seem to be making a conscious effort to do that. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I think it comes from not being afraid, because a lot of times one of the things that always was said, or like a quote, is, oh, those who can't do teach. And that really was something that would happen in the business world. Oh yeah, they couldn't make it out in industry, so they went and got and went and taught. And I felt a way about that. And I really want to remove that stigma about professors and educators, because at the end of the day, it's like they're the ones that have that's the training ground. You get to make mistakes with them, right? You get to flesh out your halfway idea in class when you're writing that paper. And it's okay, go and try that in the real world. When you try that in the real world, you fail. And so I think there's also fear on the other side, because a lot of times I will meet business executives and they will talk about the things that they struggle to do, which is train, right? And it's, oh, sounds like you need some skill set from an educator. And so I think a lot of times there's fear on both sides, industry to education to industry. And so we have these little sayings like, oh, you couldn't make it and that's why you're here. And then lo and behold, you're struggling in terms of training your workforce as a business person, and you need that educational piece. You need that skill set and structure. And for me, I look at it as bridging the gap, right? There's so much we can learn from each other, and learning should never stop. It's so funny, because the main reason why I would say I didn't want to be a doctor is because I said I didn't want to go to school for 13 years. And I don't think I've stopped learning. So it's like I should have continued to do a whole nother industry if I'm just still going to be in school. The classroom just looks different, right? I think just being committed to being a lifelong learner is something that has served me well. And I want to change that stigma around there being a gap between education and industry. It's interwoven. Both need each other to survive. And I will leave that at that before I get on my political platform, but both are needed to survive. You need well-trained, adequate staff for your business. And also in the educational space, you need to continue to tap into the insights and the trends of what's going on in the industry. So that's my stance on that. We both need each other.
I agree. And I'm right there with you. And that's the goals of Innovation Insights, is to help bridge that gap, because I've been on both and I've moved back and forth throughout my whole career. And training people to go into an industry, I feel like I have to have that background in the industry. And with the classes that you teach and the experiences that you're sharing with your students, that's invaluable. So just kudos.
Thank you.
Let's see. I've been making notes here because I feel like I'm in class myself here. So I'm looking at my notes and I'm thinking, okay, I want to tap into your thoughts on women in sports, and because you've done some work in sports. And what are your thoughts now, especially along the ownership, the business aspect of sports, because we're seeing more women involved in that. And that just makes me so happy.
Yes. Yeah. It's interesting, because I feel like every industry that I've tapped into is always been the conversation about, oh, it's male dominated. Tech is male dominated. Sports is male dominated. And the thing about it is, it's so exciting to see not only the trajectory of the executives, whether it be them owning teams, whether they're business managers for the team, and then even also highlighting the women that are on the field. Just seeing the interest and the marketability of women in sports has just been so fun to watch. And things that are going on with the WNBA, and then, like I said, we're in Final Four season. And so seeing the women's sport, women's games be more compelling, I would say, than the men's game, because it's like I can name a whole bunch more of the women players versus who's the number one draft pick right now for the NBA. So it's just like, I think it's exciting to see what the future holds. But I think it also, I think we have to give credit to the pioneers and the trailblazers where it went, it did feel that much more dominated, because they made a concerted effort to put the groundwork in. So when I was a recent graduate in 2012, I joined an organization called WISE, and it was called Women, and it stood for Women in Sports and Events. And that was a group of women at that time who were executives for teams, managers for major corporations that sponsored league teams, women that worked in the venues that hosted those different teams, whether it be arenas or football stadiums. And they had programming that surrounded about how to network, that surrounded about getting to know and one another. So we had a lot of just like informal games that we would go to and build those relationships. And so I also, like, while I'm so excited about where it's going, I think we also need to give credit to the women that were the only one in the room then and said, we need to pour back in and create an association, an organization amongst ourselves to build up that next generation of talent. And so what you're seeing now is the benefit of those intentional workings. And so that's what even just makes me so much more excited, because now we have the network, right? And we're seeing the fruits of it. And then it encourages more women to get involved with these types of organizations. I think it's amazing.
It is. And I agree. I'm a few generations ahead of you in life. And yeah.
You don't.
Oh, thank you. Some days I feel it. But yeah, it's. Being on this end, it is so good to see, after being the one, the only, the first, you know, that there are some changes. We still have a lot of work to do. We still have a lot of work to do. So even though we're celebrating, just get up on my little soapbox and say we have a lot of work to do. And we need advocates, too. We need advocates out there of all genders.
Most definitely. And the only other thing I will say too, because I would be remiss if I only talk about the good and not talk about the areas of improvement, because there's definitely parallels in terms of working in sports and working in hospitality in the kitchen. And one of the things was the hours, right? The environment when it comes to you put a whole bunch of young people in a high pressure situation with alcohol, with access to different vices, and it could be a cocktail for disaster. And in both of those respects, that was a major concern in terms of even pursuing a career in those spaces. It's when you're going to have time for insert X, Y, and Z. And I also want to say that being a woman that has been exposed to those types of environments, it also makes me that much of an informed executive. It makes me that much more of an informed educator of ways to avoid those just bad practices, bad behavior, right? And so I think because there's more women in those spaces that are championing or doing their best to champion better habits and better behaviors, it makes it a better environment for everybody, yeah. Right? Because it's like when you're able to be empowered in a space to say, hey, this isn't right, or hey, let's work together in terms of how do we better equip our staff so I can step away? Because some of it is you have to be there, but some of it is because you don't trust your team to do the job. And so like when we have those exposure to some of the negative sides of the business, we have to utilize those learnings to be able to create a better environment. And it's not 9 times out of 10. Every single time when that is done, the business itself is more profitable. It is a better experience for both men and women in the workplace when we actually have people that are intentional about making it just humane and so on and so forth. So I did want to say that as well, because I think that's a question behind the question. If I could take liberty, like, what is it like? And it's, yeah, there's parts of it that is not glamorous, but it's up to us to really use our voices and use our influence to make it better for others.
So beautifully said. And that could be applied to so many different industries, to academia, to just organizations. So thank you. That was absolutely beautifully stated.
Thank you.
Okay. One thing I also want to ask you about is legal within technology now and AI, because, oh my goodness, every day there is some new development in AI, at least I mean, many different levels, a lot on the consumer side that people can use and purchase platforms. But I know there's a lot going backside within corporations and commerce that way too.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts about? I know it could be like this could be a whole other podcast. I'll probably have you back on for that. But
so here I like to just spit off thoughts and then hopefully it will make one cohesive argument. So one, AI is a form of machine learning, right? And the thing about it is it has been in existence for a very long time. And I think it's just a matter of us as consumers being aware of what we really want. I say that because when you go into your phone and want to find out the 10 closest restaurants near me, there is a form of machine learning that exists in terms of providing you with the convenience of being able to know what are the top restaurants, not only top restaurants based off of cuisine, based off of price point and location. A machine is learning that with the data that you put in that you said you wanted. Okay. So there's that piece to it. I think there's another piece to it as a business owner where every time when you're starting a business, you are a solopreneur. And there are tools and aspects now that we have our hands on that when we don't have all the financial capital, machine learning fills in that gap for us as solopreneurs for us to be able to scale our businesses. Number two. Number three, from a legal standpoint, it comes down to the implications on the level of privacy that a consumer, whether it is the consumer is the business or the consumer is the individual, that are in place. There are laws in place that are there to protect you, that are specific in breaking down how we protect certain information as it relates to HIPAA laws. And that's, for those who don't know, from a health perspective, how your sensitive data has to be protected by law. These companies, if they do not abide by it, are fined. Similarly, GLBA, so that's something that regulates the financial FINRA. Those are the ones that regulate the financial institutions and how they protect and regulate the data as it relates to your payment information, credit card information, and things of that nature. So there are laws in place to protect. And then on the flip side, there is a demand that we are asking for as business owners, as consumers, and that we expect. If I type into Google right now, and I'm sorry that Google's catching a stray, right? And it doesn't provide me with accurate information. There's an expectation there. And the only way to get to that expectation is to be able to use this tool, which is machine learning. And so I think my thoughts on it is for us as consumers to get very practical and very real about what it is that we really want, because it's easy to point the finger at the big, scary, spooky monster. But the thing is, you're feeding it. So you have to decide for yourself on what aligns with your personal value system. With you choose, hey, my time on social media is taking up too much. And there's algorithms that are designed to make sure that you stay on social media. It is your own personal choice and value system to decide to turn it off. Similarly, it's up to you on how much information that you want to put in when you are going into Amazon and have your saved search. Because I look, I'm like, you know what? I literally work in data privacy and cybersecurity, and I have all my information saved. So it's because it saves me time. But that is also something that I'm weighing in terms of, wait a minute, that means they're holding my information. And so we have to make those personal decisions as to how we want to feed it, because the reality is, it's not going away. So we have to decide on how, what our relationship is going to look like. That is my...
I think you're curious. More thoughts on it. I feel like I've just been in court. Oh, I've been to school today. I've been to court today. I so agree with you. This business would not, Innovation Insights, there's no way that I could do this as a side gig AI.
Yeah, without support.
Machine learning and all of it. So you embrace, you make decisions, you think about your values and you move forward. But it's not going away. Like I said, it is not going away. Okay, I have another question about your future. So do you think that you'll ever go back to the sports and entertainment industry? You think that's ever gonna lure you back in?
Yes, because literally during the whole Olympic phase, like, people would say, oh, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. And I would say, no, I'm going to do this again in my lifetime. Yes, I'm not taking away the magnitude of how amazing that experience is, but I always said it's not for me. It's not once in my lifetime that I'm going to be involved in these types of events. And so it's exciting that World Cup is around the corner, and the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia will be one of the rounds in terms of where it will take place. And I'm going to take my own advice in being open to the path to get there, right? Because my title does not say sports marketing executive, right? So how will I be involved? I don't know. But I do know it's just a fire inside of me that somehow, some way, I will be involved in many times over. So yes, I do believe that I will be pulled back in, and I'm open to the path of how.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure you will. You get to see you light up when you talk about it too. And yeah, just such amazing experiences. Thank you for being here. And I really also want to hear your definition of innovation.
Ooh. Innovation stems from filling a need. I think it is such a powerful word to innovate, but it comes from the simplest place of seeing a gap, whether it is a gap in education, whether it's a gap in business acumen, whether it's a gap of sense of community, right? Innovating comes from a space of how do I make it all work together? And innovation for me not only sees the gap, but cares enough to do something about it. Innovators are people who, when they're hearing other people on the sidelines say, oh man, I wish there was that pothole fixed. Again, that's an Atlanta thing. I wish someone would fix that pothole. The innovator is the person that finds the material, right? Because they too are sitting there. They too are experiencing the traffic. They too are experiencing it. But they're just like, you know what? I care enough to do something about it. And so I may not be the bricklayer, but the innovator myself would say, let me go find out who does. Let me go talk to this person. Let me go talk to my representative. Let me go find out who needs to close this road down so that they can do the repairs? Let me all those things happen when you're an innovator. It's like you go out, you see an issue, you see a gap, and you care enough, and then you do something about it. So that is what innovation is to me.
Thank you for that definition. And it so wraps up your career, which is still a very young career. So I can't wait to see what the next 9 years has for you, because you've already lived a good 80 of them. Well, thank you, Adeola, for sharing your story and your insights and your mission with us today. What would be the best way for people to get a hold of you?
Oh, so the best way for people to get a hold of me is, again, I'm open to the path. So if they're on Instagram, they can find me at Yola's Kitchen. So Y-O-L-A-S Kitchen, all one word. If they wanted to find me in a business capacity, I am on LinkedIn. It's my first and last name. And I also have my company page to follow. It's A-Y-O Hospitality. That spells Ayo, which is the ode to my Nigerian roots, because Ayo means joy. So it's like happy hospitality. And then good old fashioned email works as well. So it's my first name, Adeola at ayohospitality.com. And those are the ways that you can reach me. So whether it's LinkedIn, Instagram, or like I said, good old fashioned email. I'm not going to get my phone number out, but those are the ways that you guys can find me.
It's smart of you. I've given my phone number out. Half the world has mine, it seems. Oh my God. Oh, thank you. We'll make sure all of those ways to contact are in the show notes too. And so again, thank you for being here. I'm sure that we'll have you back to hear more about your journey.
Thank you so much. And can I say one more thing?
Absolutely.
I wanted to say thank you for having this type of platform, especially about innovation, because even though now it may seem like I'm just so confident in the space of doing all these different things, oftentimes I felt alone, because it was like, how can you say that you're interested in law, but then also say that you're interested in cooking? How can you say you want to work in tech and all these different things? But having this platform and having this space to say it's okay to be good at different things or have interest in different things and not feel like you're doing too much or you're all over the place is something that brings just a joy to my heart. So I want to say thank you to you for being bold enough to just even think outside the box that, hey, the whole mantra of this is that people are doing a whole bunch of stuff and it's okay. And it doesn't mean that you're flighty. It doesn't mean that you're less committed, because that's another thing that happens a lot is like you're not as committed to one or the other. And so creating a space specifically about innovation is so needed. So I wanted to say thank you for that, because you don't realize what that does for me. It literally again, creates that confidence of just to keep going and not feel like you have to tiptoe around everything that you're doing. Thank you. I just had to say that to you.
Oh, well, thank you. To our guests, thank you for watching. And I hope that you're inspired by Adeola and her story. Please continue to follow the work of the Navigate Foundation and the Chef Academy and connect with her on LinkedIn or Instagram. Please don't forget to subscribe to Innovation Insights podcast for more discussions like this, and join us next time as we continue to explore the intersections of innovation, education, and leadership. So thank you for tuning in. Keep innovating, keep dreaming, and keep making a difference.